One of the most admired attributes of human character is that of strength and courage. We admire seeing someone struggle courageously against seemingly insurmountable odds and winning. It may be a sickness, a handicap, or some other disability or battle in life. Likewise, we can be very disappointed in ourselves or in others for not being stronger and more courageous during a time of serious trial. Probably we've all been there too on that side. Sometimes people give up under the stress or pressure they are feeling at the time. They usually feel very guilty and that they have let themselves and others down. Let's ask, what is courage and how can we have more of it in our Christian life? It is very important. The Bible certainly speaks a lot of that. Paul certainly did, and others, as we will see. I'd like to look at the Christian's need for strength and courage. And certainly in this age that we live in, it is absolutely a need. Is it not only a need, is it also a command, by the way? And the answer, if we go to Joshua chapter 1, yes, it is. It is also a command. And here in Joshua 1, I think this is familiar to most all of us, but let's look at it again. Joshua 1, verses 5 through 9. God said to, the Lord said here to Joshua, "No man shall be able to stand before you all the days of your life. As I was with Moses, so I will be with you. And I will not leave you nor forsake you." And that's what Jesus has said to us in Matthew 28. Verse 6, "Be strong and of good courage, for of this to this people you shall divide an inheritance in the land which I swore to their fathers to give them. Only be strong and very courageous, that you may observe to do according to all the law which Moses my servant commanded you. Do not turn from it to the right hand or to the left, that you may prosper wherever you go." And in verse 7 is the second time that he said that, commanding him to be strong and of very good courage, courageous. Verse 8, "This book of the law shall not depart from your mouth, but you shall meditate in it day and night, that you may observe to do according to all that is written in it. For then you will make your way prosperous, and then you will have good success." Well, this book of the law today is expanded, isn't it? It's now the entire Bible. And for us, and we are to read it and meditate on it night and day. It's a part of our life, of how we live. Verse 9, finally, "Have I not commanded you? Be strong and of good courage. Do not be afraid nor be dismayed, for the Lord your God is with you wherever you go." So we are commanded to be strong and courageous. And the emphasis here, because he repeated it three times to Joshua, it's recorded for us, obviously, meaning us too. We are to overcome fear. As he said there in verse 9, "Don't be afraid and don't be dismayed. I'm with you wherever you go. I will not forsake you. I'm with you." What is fear? Well, it is an emotion arising from anticipation of danger or harm. Now, that can be helpful or it can also be harmful. Fear not, the two words fear not appear in the Bible over 500 times. God knew man would have to learn how to deal with fear, how to deal with fear. Winston Churchill had a very interesting physician. His name was Lord Moran. During the First World War, he wrote a book, or actually following the war, and it was entitled Anatomy of Courage. He observed the troops in war in World War I. Observing fear and courage, he classified men into four different groups. It's quite interesting because a lot of it, we can certainly, I think it was a good, an accurate classification when you look at it because of what we see in the Bible, as you will see as we go along. The first class, he said, were those who did not feel fear ever. This was maybe 1 in 1,000 individuals, in his opinion. It is unnatural, though, to never feel fear. The Roman historian Tacitus wrote that sudden terror alarms even the bravest of men. Well, Lord Moran wrote that fearlessness is usually rooted in a vacant mind. He said some were just too stupid to be afraid. That probably changed after the first few shots were fired. Then there was a second group, he said. And these were those who feel fear, but they do not show it. They control their fear. They submerge their fear. On the surface, they appear to have, they do not appear to have any fear at all, but they do. Quite interesting. Then the third classification was interesting. Those who were soldiers he saw were those who felt fear, and they showed the fear. But they did their duty anyway. When you see films of World War I, and they blow the whistle, and they come out of the trenches, head across that field towards the German machine guns, some of them get hit coming up out of the trench and fall right back in the trench. That's how they don't go any further than that. And you know, that must have been an awful thing. And hundreds of thousands in the Battle of Verdun, over 1 million were killed. 1 million people killed. And what, in my opinion, was some of the most ridiculous lack of strategy of war, both on the German side and the Allied side, the British and American and French. This third class, those who felt fear, who showed it, but would do their duty anyway, represented the majority of soldiers on the battlefield. They exercised discipline over themselves, realizing there was no real alternative. We must learn that there is no disgrace in fear if we do our duty to the best of our ability in life. Yes, in the Bible, as we're going to see as we go along here, there's a lot of people, God's people, who feared. Some feared and turned and ran. Others learned later, repented, and faced, they ran again, not away, but at whatever it was they feared. And still, they had obviously certain fears in them. Let me give you an example of one individual. We just talked about him a couple weeks ago, Moses. We certainly saw what on the first holy day I spoke about the spies coming back. But what about Moses himself? If you look over here in Exodus chapter 4, you know, God had to work with Moses and teach him courage and trust. It wasn't something he was born with, and that's another point too. We are not born courageous. We have to learn. In Exodus chapter 4, and it's a part of what a Christian has to do, come to learn as well. And here in Exodus chapter 4, verse 10, then Moses said to the Lord, "Oh, my Lord, I'm not eloquent, neither before nor since you have spoken to your servant, but I am slow of speech and slow of tongue." In other words, I can't do this. You don't really want to send me back. What was he really making? He's making an excuse for what reason? His fear. I don't want to go back there and face Pharaoh. It's fear that, verse 14, so the anger of the Lord was kindled against Moses. And he said, "Is not Aaron the Levite your brother? I know that he can speak speak well. And look, he is also coming out to meet you. And when he sees you, he will be glad in his heart." He will, I want you to go, but he will then be the spokesman. In other words, no excuses. You're going. And, well, Moses had to learn, didn't he? And, well, all of us do. I don't know of anyone, any of God's servants or people in the Bible who did not have fear and did not at first control their fear, but had to learn how, through faith and contact with God and God's working with them, to learn how to overcome that and control it and be able to go forward. It's interesting, in the Bible, Christians faced lions, but did not give in to their fears and recant. They faced fiery trials, did they not, as well? There is no disgrace about being open about our fears if we are doing something about them. We all have them. We have to face them and then do the right things to control them and overcome them. And that's a part of faith. That's a part of becoming a Christian. It's a part of character and character building. Now, the fourth class. The fourth class that Lord Moran saw were those who felt fear. They showed the fear, and they turned from their responsibilities and ran. This is defined as cowardice. Cowardice is not equal to fear. They are not the same thing. One can be fearful and still not be a coward. Fear is an emotion. It is an emotion that can be controlled. It can be controlled. Cowardice is an action. It is what a man does or does not do. It is selfish regard for one's own protection and safety above others. It is giving in to fear and letting fear control you. This is very interesting because I'd like to go over here to Matthew 13. Parable of the sower and the seed. You know, the first three people mentioned here by Christ in this parable have something in common, which is why they never come into the church. Fear. Fear. Let's take a look at this. In Matthew 13, verse 18, therefore hear the parable of the sower. Now here's the interpretation of it. Verse 19, when anyone hears the words of the kingdom and does not understand it, then the wicked one comes and he snatches away what was sown in his heart. This is he who received seed by the wayside. Now how did the devil come by and be able to snatch it out of his hands? Do you think he might have been wondering suddenly, what's going to happen if I go forward with this and continue with this way? Look at verse 20. But he who received the seed on the stony places, this is he who hears the word, and immediately he receives it with joy. Yet he has no root in himself, but endures only for a while. For when tribulation, persecution, arises because of the word, immediately he stumbles. Fear. What's going to happen to my family? What about my job? What about this? What about that? And suddenly, you know, oh, this was really wonderful. This is great. And then it finally hits them. That means I'm going to have to make some changes here. I'm going to have to go to my employer and actually ask them to let me off on the Sabbath. And when I tell them it's because of my new religion, I'm afraid what they're going to say to me. I don't know if I really feel comfortable in doing that. And that's kind of been the case at times. And when I've talked with people new coming along into the church, and I've been praying that God would open the door so I won't have to work on part of the day on Saturday. And I said, well, have you talked to your employer? I mean, we have a letter that can show, that explains what our teachings and belief are, that you can present and everything. Have you talked to them? No, I just haven't got to that yet. Why? Fear. There's all different kinds of fear, right? Not just here we're talking about getting up out of a trench and running toward a machine gun or the Germans on the other side, being fearless to that, or being able to control your fear to run out there and hope you don't get shot. But what about just life itself and the things we run into? I mean, I had to see that in my own life when it came to the things I began to realize I was going to have to give up. And as we go throughout life, we run into many things that are new to us, and how do we react to them? Well, as you're going on, let me just finish this. Again, you see the common thread here. Verse 22, now he who receives seed among the thorns is he who hears the word, and the cares of this world and the deceitfulness of riches choke the word, and he becomes unfruitful. Well, what was it behind the word? What was it that is choking it? I mean, if you receive it with joy and if everything is great, what would cause that to change suddenly? When you really stop and think and have, this is a thing all people and all of you who were called out of this world and realizing what you're going to have to give up and quit at times in order to keep the commandments of God, serve God. Suddenly, that's going to make a big, it's going to require quite a decision. I've been able to visit some new people here. I had two visits this last week, one in Cape Coral and one right here. And it's very interesting in listening. I had breakfast with this one fellow over in Cape Coral, very nice man, by the way. And I want to continue to keep working with him, visiting him. He's very interested, but he's realizing there's some things that are going to have to change in his life, or that he's got to change. And he's, in other words, counting the cost for him and going through the same thing that all the rest of us at one time or another had to go through. I've visited another one over here too in this area a couple weeks back, and they're now having to evaluate, is this what I really want to do? It was great until I found out after that minister sat down and talked, and we were discussing things. Actually, I didn't bring it up. The individual brought it up to me, and I explained, yes, that's, we do believe in that, and it's something that a person has to, at some point, come to, through their proof and conviction of it, want to make it a part of their life, too. And so some of these things may turn out to be stumbling blocks. I hope not. I pray that in time, because I realize it took myself time. It's taken everybody I've ever visited over the years who've come in the church. Time is not something that can be rushed. And God is a God of long suffering and working. But anyhow, my point here, getting back to the subject here, they have to come to the point to where they become convicted. They come to have the faith to trust God, to step out in faith that God will open that door. He will, as I use the expression, not put us out on the limb and saw it off behind us. And that adds up to courage, doesn't it? And it's not there automatically. It takes time and for that to come and to be developed before we're able to come all the way. Notice Matthew chapter 19. Matthew chapter 19, just a few chapters ahead. I didn't read the fourth one back there on the sower and the seed. The one that comes along produces a good seed, falls on good ground, 30, 60, 100 fold. That individual was probably in the previous three classes. When you look, I'm saying that from experience. And finally, came to the point where they could no longer just ignore and stay away and walk away. They did, but it's like one person I talked to this week. Been away for a long time. I can't stay away. And this person's coming back. Very, very good visit. And I think we all can relate to that when we look back in our life. Here, Matthew 19, verse 20 and 20 through 22. Verse 20, the young man that came to Christ, the young lawyer, said to him, "Well, all these things I have kept from my youth," the commandments spoken of earlier, "so what do I still lack?" And Jesus said to him, "If you want to be perfect, go sell what you have and give to the poor, and you will have treasure in heaven, and come follow me." But when the young man heard that saying, he went away sorrowful, for he had great possessions. It hit him. Give it all up? Well, you know, that's what hit me at one time too. Give, why, Friday night and Saturday, that's my whole life. As I looked at it at that time. Got to give up everything. Yeah, in one sense, that's correct. And that's the way this individual was looking at it too, when Christ and said, "You come and follow me." The fear of loss took over, and this young lawyer turned away. He did not control this fear and do his duty. Now, maybe later, but at that point in time, he did not. We never hear about him later. You hope and pray that later, maybe he did. But that's like so many of us, and like so many people I've visited over the years. When it finally hits them, of what they might have to change in their life, what it's going to mean, You know, like the first time I realized, you know, Christmas was a big thing in my family I grew up in. And I thought, I'm going to have to tell my brother and my sister. I think I can tell my parents because I live here and I'm with them all the time. But boy, you know, how am I going to explain this to them? Took a while. But I finally did. And same with all of these people. Because at first we're failing. At first, I can't do this. And it is because of fear. And that's why so much is said about fear in the Bible. God is training us, working with us, helping to build courage and strength in us, the opposite of fear. What is this thing that we call courage? It has to do with, obviously, controlling fear. Some individuals, Mark Twain once said that courage is the resistance to fear. It's the mastery of fear, but it is not the absence of fear. Couldn't disagree with that. John Wayne said, well, courage is being scared to death and saddling up anyway. John Goddard, who was part of the space program is named after him, said that courage is conquering fear and functioning. Conquering fear and all three of these said the same thing, just in different words. Quite interesting. Fear is taken for granted. Courage has to do with conquering fear and functioning, and courage is a moral quality as well. One is not born with courage. Courage is intimately tied up with character. Character. Lord Moran wrote that, quote, a man of character becomes a man of courage in war. Interesting. Character would be very, very important to have, to be able to control that, and certainly at war conditions. If we are growing in Christ-like character, we are automatically growing in courage as well. Think about that. Mr. Armstrong said that character involves making the right choice when confronted between right and wrong. I wouldn't disagree with that. It certainly is. How many times have we made the wrong choice and had to go back and repent of that and turn it around? Courage is also involves making a right choice between cowardice and responsibility, between self-indulgence and self-sacrifice, between hanging back and going forward. Courage is thought through, which for a Christian includes prayer. It is choosing to do what is right regardless of the consequences. Like character, it is a quality of the mind. When I was just a little boy, my mother always taught me to tell the truth. No matter what the consequences are, you should always tell the truth. I was taught that right about the first, second grade, somewhere back there. And of course, I believed it, and it was true. And I, of course, believe it to this day. But that isn't really taught that much anymore, is it? Now, when you go into a court of law, you better tell the truth, because you get caught lying there, you're in really big trouble. But out in this world, we see all of our leadership and people, they lie. Some deliberately do it. Some people lie and scheme and lie. It's everywhere. They don't have the courage to tell the truth. When somebody's caught and they are sure that they've got the right person, and they begin to interview them, they lie. And lie and lie and lie. Why? Because they are afraid and they have not the courage or the character to tell the truth. People go before the judge on an arraignment, and how do you plead? They're always innocent, right? Always innocent. No, of course, the attorneys tell them to do that because they see if they can... If they say the truth, I'm guilty, and then that means I guess they would be sentenced at that time, and it might be worse than if they went ahead and gave an innocent plea and then see if, what happens going through the court proceedings and so on. Can they get something reduced, the charges or whatever? The Webster's Dictionary says that courage is mental or moral strength to venture, to persevere, and withstand danger, fear, and difficulty in life. Courage implies firmness and strength of mind. We see an example of those in the Bible that did not have it. In Acts chapter 5, you don't need to turn there, I'll tell you, you know what the story is, but remember Ananias and Sapphira. They got together and they contrived this lie that they were selling the property for a certain amount and giving it to the church. I don't know what it was for. At that time, the church was in its infancy. And people, by the way, property and things probably were not as valued as they are today. But they wanted to look good before others, and they were, we're giving all of this. And Peter asked Ananias about it first, and he lied to Peter. Right there, looked him in the face and lied, and Peter knew it. And God intervened and took his life. And 3 hours later, the story says, they came to Sapphira, the wife. And Peter asked her, well, did you, she didn't know that her husband was dead. Did you sell the property and to give here to whatever the fund was at the time for such and such price? Oh, yes, we did. We wanted to be able to, you know, help everybody. And they would know, of course, that we were really serving and giving. Well, the people that took your husband have arrived at the door because you have lied to God. You know, that's something I've never seen God repeat that as far, but he showed that he was working there through Peter. We are not to lie. It's very important to God. Now, there was fear involved there, lack of character, fear to tell the truth, fear to tell the truth. It cost them their lives. And God set it up as an example for the church and brethren from that time since. They lacked the courage to tell the truth. They let the fear of what others might think stop them from obeying God. We don't want to do that. Now, is courage something that is called for only on rare occasions? No, it is needed daily. It is needed daily. It takes courage to lead a Christian life. It is exercised quietly and privately by a Christian. For example, it takes courage to resist temptation, doesn't it? It takes courage to endure persecution for your beliefs, ridicule, things of that nature. It takes courage to love someone who hates you. It takes courage to endure illness and trials in life. It takes courage to go to your brother rather than gossip about him behind his back. It takes courage to say, I have been wrong. I am 100% responsible. It takes courage to control one's temper. And we could go, and there's other examples too of many things we could look at. In Revelation 21, verse 7 and 8, here we come to the time of new heavens and new earth. Verse 7, he who overcomes shall inherit all things, and I will be his God, and he shall be my son. But the cowardly, unbelieving, abominable, and murderers, sexually immoral, sorcerers, idolaters, and all liars shall have their part in the lake, which burns with fire and brimstone, which is the second death. So obviously we have to repent and overcome all of these things. Everyone is able, with God's help, to control their fears and to exercise courage. Now let's look at how a Christian can build courage in his character. One of the best ways is to study the examples of courage in the Bible. You have both sides. You have that which is lacking in courage, but the same people later became courageous. There was a time when David was courageous. There was a time when he wasn't. And then there was a time when he was again courageous. And yes, we learn from these things. In 1 Samuel chapter 17, let's take a look at 1 Samuel 17 and how David handled this. We had the Israeli army quivering in their boots over Goliath, standing out there challenging anyone to come out and to have a fight with swords with him. And this kid who tends sheep, whose older brothers were already there and they were cowering in their tracks before this big Goliath. So was Saul, by the way, who was there. But it's interesting how David at that time, he told Saul, look, I have had to, in protecting my dad's sheep, I've had to fight off bears, black bears, and lions, the Asian lion that roamed in that area at that time. And it must have been quite a fight if he took on a lion who was coming out there to get a lamb or something and went out there with a spear. He would have had a staff. He would have had a number of things. But God had delivered him through all of that, and he believed that God would deliver him. And who's this big guy out here that you're all scared of and afraid of? Well, in verse 26 of chapter 17, then David spoke to the men who stood by him, saying, what shall be done for the man who kills this Philistine and takes away the reproach from Israel? For who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God? Wow. All right. You're young. You don't know any better. You don't realize the danger here. He's so much bigger and taller than anybody. And one whack and we're gone. Anyone who wants to go out there and challenge him. In verse 32, then David said to Saul, let no man's heart fail because of him. That is, don't let anyone's heart be afraid. Your servant will go and fight with this Philistine. And in verse 36, your servant has killed both lions, bears, and this uncircumcised Philistine will be like one of them, seeing that he has defied the armies of the living God. Now here you begin to see where David's getting his courage, because he's looking to God. Who is this person who's this uncircumcised, meaning he is contrary to, he's not a part of God's covenant people. And he's defying the armies of the living God. The living God is the one who's going to be with me, and I'll take care of it. Verse 37, moreover, David said that the Lord who delivered me from the paw of the lion and from the paw of the bear, he will deliver me from the hand of this Philistine. And Saul said to David, go and the Lord be with you. And he certainly was. As you go to verse 45, then David said to the Philistine, you come to me with a sword, with a spear, with a javelin. I come to you in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied. Now that's where his courage was coming from. It wasn't David pumping himself up. He believed. He was a man, when he looked out at the stars at night watching over those sheep, he was talking to God. And he believed that God was the one who was going to, there was no way that God would let me fail in taking this person on. Who is this person to come out here and stand up against the armies of the living God? And this person who's not even a part of the covenant. That's why circumcision is mentioned there. And so you know the rest of the story. He believed that God would be behind him, and sure enough, he was. And that's where courage comes from, and that's where it comes from for us. We need to pray about many things at times to have the courage. Another one, let's look at Esther chapter 4. What can we learn from all of this and applying it in our everyday life? Have you ever noticed how you like to put things off that you need to do? Have you ever thought, in some cases it may not just be by fear, but in other cases it may be, that you put certain things off. I dread having to do that. I dread having to face them or whatever it might be. I wish I didn't have to do that. Maybe I'll see if I can find some other way to get out of this. Well, here's a case of that, and that's Queen Esther. In chapter 4, let me get there and I'll read it to you. It's a really interesting thing, because her first response to her uncle Mordecai was, are you kidding? If I do that, I'll lose my head. Let me get back. Here it is, chapter 4 of the book of Esther. Let's go verse 11. So all the king's servants and the people of the king's province know that any man or woman who goes into the inner court to the king, this is her response to Mordecai, who has not been called, he has but one law, put all to death, except the one to whom the king holds out the golden scepter that he may live. Yet I myself have not been called to go into the king these 30 days. Now, chapter 1, there was a former queen called Vashti. Now, Vashti refused to do whatever the king was asking there, and it cost her dearly, you might recall. Esther was the replacement. And so she understood the law of the Medes and the Persians. Well, as you read on here, verse 12, so they told Mordecai Esther's words. And Mordecai told them to answer Esther, "Do not think in your heart that you will escape in the king's palace any more than all the other Jews. For if you remain completely silent at this time, you don't fulfill your responsibilities that you're afraid of. Relief and deliverance will arise for the Jews from another place, but you and your father's house will perish. Yet who knows whether you have come to this kingdom for such a time as this?" Quite a statement. Well, Esther told them to reply to Mordecai, since you put it that way. Verse 16, "Go gather all the Jews who are present in Shushan and fast for me. Neither eat nor drink for 3 days, night or day. My maids and I will fast likewise, and so I will go to the king, which is against the law, and if I perish, I perish." Now we see courage. And it came, what, 3 days of fasting and prayer that she and her maids did, and asking the Jews to do for her, that she might have the courage to do this. And she did, and we know the outcome. And quite a testimony there in the Bible. What's it telling you and me? We run into things we're afraid of. We need to go to God and pray and draw closer to God to have the strength and the courage to stand up in faith and to follow through. And he will help us. He will help us. Other stories I could give to you. How about, and I won't read it, but the story of Gideon. Judges chapter 6 through 8. But particularly chapter 6 verse 11 through 23. When the Lord appeared to Gideon, he tested the Lord to be sure it was truly him. That's chapter 6 verse 11 through 23. Really quite interesting in how the Lord helped Gideon to have courage. I'm using you, and you'll read there about Gideon. He says, "My tribe is the least in Israel. Why you brought us out of Egypt, my ancestors, on all the things you did for them, why have you let the Midianites conquer us? And I'm the least." Well, God is saying, yeah, that's why I chose you. You're the least. Very interesting story. How God works with Gideon. He comes to have the faith and the courage and the strength. Before God worked with him, began to call him, he didn't have it. But he did have it afterwards. It shows us the source of how we learn character, courage, strength. We just don't go out and think that we're going to be real big and strong and all these things. There are things, you know, I've seen people, they think they're really strong, courageous, they're big athletes, they have huge muscles and everything like this, and they'll meet any challenge on the field. What about life? I've watched these hockey players, I don't go to hockey games all that often. These fellows, actually, if you take the gear off of them, they're quite small people. They're not that big. Oh, they get out there and they can really fight with even those who are bigger than them. I don't know why they allow that, but they do in hockey. And, I mean, they are fierce fighters out there and all of that. But when you go home and you take that uniform off, what kind of a husband are you? What kind of a father are you? How do you face up to the responsibilities of everyday life? Do you have the same courage then? A lot of times, well, maybe some do, but in other cases, they may not. Let's go to the book of Daniel. I'd like to, this one, I just want to review it quickly. The story is an amazing thing of individuals who stood up with courage and would not back down. First, we have Daniel's three friends in the third chapter, just a quick few verses of that, verse 16 through 18, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. They answered the king and said to him, O Nebuchadnezzar, we have no need to answer you in this matter. If that is the case, our God whom we serve is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us from your hand, O king. But if not, let it be known to you, O king, that we do not serve your gods, nor will we worship the gold image that you have set up. Is that courage or what? Is it all just them? They got together and had a huddle and talked, we got to be courageous, we got to show ourselves. No, those people were close to God. They were spending time on their knees. And if you looked at chapter 6, here's another man, Daniel himself, thrown into the lion's den. In verse 10, now when Daniel knew that the writing was signed, he went home, and in his upper room, with his windows open toward Jerusalem, he knelt down on his knees three times that day and prayed and gave thanks before his God, as was his custom since early days. He knew what was coming too. Verse 16, so the king, after the astrologers, whatever they were, came to the king. This person is, you know, praying to another god. So the king, verse 16, gave the command, and they brought Daniel and cast him into the den of lions. You know what happened. Verse 18, the king actually fasted all night. I do too. I don't usually... Most of us do fast all night. Maybe kings at that time got up for a midnight snack or something. I don't know, and he passed up on it. verse 21, early in the morning, then Daniel's king comes, and Daniel said to the king, O king, live forever. That was the way of addressing the king and all of that with respect. My God sent his angel and shut the lions' mouths so that they have not hurt me, because I was found innocent before him. And also, O king, I have done no wrong before you. He would revert back to verse 10. That's why Daniel could say what he did in verse 22. It was because what he was doing in verse 10. And that's what gave him the courage. He knew he was going to be arrested. He knew he was going to be wind up. I don't know if he knew in advance it was going to be the lion's den or not, but that's where it wound up at. And he was willing and he had the courage. Well, there's a lot of very interesting scriptures we can turn to and look at of people with courage. How about our Savior Jesus Christ in his ministry? Let's go to John chapter 2. John chapter 2. If there was ever a person, now Jesus has no failing, does he? All the other people we've looked at probably had failings at one time or another in their life, and they were growing and learning how to become strong and of good courage. But Jesus had it from the beginning. And here in John 2 and verse 13, now the Passover of the Jews was at hand, and Jesus went up to Jerusalem, and he found in the temple those who sold oxen and sheep and doves and the money changers doing business. And when he had made a whip of cords, he drove them all out of the temple with the sheep and the oxen, and poured out the changers' money and overturned the tables. Wasn't afraid, was he? Well, what will the people think? What will they do to me? Verse 16, and he said to those who sold doves, take these things away. Do not make my father's house a house of merchandise. Then his disciples remembered that it was written, zeal for your house has eaten me up. Well, it didn't just end there. Later in chapter 7, on the seventh day of the Feast of Tabernacles, chapter 7, verse 37 through 39, there must have been several thousand people there in the courtyard of the temple mount. See, the whole structure up there was called the temple, not just the building of the temple. And you had the water ceremony in which they would march down to the pool of Siloam. They would come back up. The band was playing, I mean, the instruments and so on. They came down, I forgot what gate it's called. They came down the 12 steps for the 12 steps of Israel to the altar, to walk around the altar. And they do this on the last day of the feast, 7 times, the previous 6 days, just 1 time. And in the midst of the final 7th time, Chapter 7, verse 37 of John, he interrupts the procession. If any of you thirst, come to me and I will give you living water. And he did not fear in doing that. He stood up and they all were, even the guards stood back. The priest, high priest, why didn't you arrest him? Well, no man speaks like this, they said. And he stood up with great courage. It was 6 months before his final Passover and crucifixion. And he was not afraid. You know, he knew they were looking for him during the feast. They wanted to kill him. That's why he went up late to the feast. There in chapter 7, he sent his brothers on up ahead of him. And he appeared during the feast, probably halfway, it says. And then the final appearance was on the 7th day. When he stood right up in front of everybody, walked right out there, and interrupted the whole procession. And because he knew what the water symbolized, God's Spirit, which was going to come through him. So again, we see the courage and the example of courage that our Savior sets for us. So we, brethren, we have to seek greater faith. Cowardice is a lack of faith, isn't it, in life? Courage and faith go hand in hand. In Isaiah 41, let's take a look at this scripture with Israel. It applies to us. Isaiah 41, verse 13. We do need these things. And the way to get it, the way to go is through looking to God in faith. Isaiah 41, verse 13. For I, the Lord your God, will hold your right hand, saying to you, fear not, I will help you. Now, that's a prophecy to Israel, but it's also to us. And he will help us. We need to go back and read these scriptures and remind ourselves, because otherwise we forget. We forget. And what I've started in you, I'm going to finish, he said in Philippians 1, verse 6. Brethren, we have to practice courage daily in our life. If we practice courage in the little things, we will be better prepared for the bigger tests that will come in life. It is a daily thing that happens. We want to hear our Savior say to us, well done, thou good and faithful servant, come enter into the joy of your Father. What, Matthew 25 and verse 21, kingdom of God. We must meet our problems head on with courage. We cannot run from them. We have to run at them, facing our responsibilities. Action cures fear. Do what you fear to do. Always do what you fear to do and face it and do it. Action produces courage. Action produces courage. Go on the offense against fear. Make it a challenge as well in your life. Now, 2 Corinthians 10:5, let me read that again. We heard here in the sermonette. By the way, that was a very good sermonette too. I find that very helpful. 2 Corinthians chapter 10 and in verse 5. Casting down arguments and every high thing that exalts itself against the knowledge of God, bringing every thought into captivity to the obedience of Christ, meaning fear. Bring it into captivity onto the obedience of Christ. It requires a discipline. It requires also going to God on our knees and seeking his help. We have to continue to seek also to grow in love. Now, why do we need to grow in love along with this in struggles against fear? Because if you look here, and we had it in the Bible study just about a week or two back, 1 John chapter 4, verse 17 and 18. Love has been perfected among us in this, that we may have boldness in the day of judgment, because as he is, so are we in this world. There is no fear in love. Love encompasses and overcomes everything, but perfect love casts out fear, because fear involves torment. But he who fears has not been made perfect in love. Yes, fear is a focus on self, isn't it? And love is the opposite. And it is outgoing concern and thinking of others. Concern of others. We have to make up our mind, I will not let myself think on this thing or on that thought that causes me to fear and not carry through. We have in 2 Timothy chapter 1, a couple scriptures here and I'll finish. In 2 Timothy chapter 1 and verse 6 and 7, therefore I remind you to stir up the gift of God which is in you through the laying on of my hands. Wasn't that what the Lord was saying to Joshua in chapter 1, verse 9 of Joshua? Wasn't he saying that? If you go back and read the 9th verse of that chapter. For God has not given us a spirit of fear, but of power and of love and of a sound mind. Now, what do we say? Why would you say that God has not given us a spirit of fear? Did he think that possibly Timothy might have some fear? Yes. He probably also knew from his own experience, Paul had fear too at times. But now he realizes, as we get closer to God, has not given us a spirit of fear. He's given us a spirit of power, of love, and of a sound mind. Power is strength, and power also leads into courage. I'd like to end this sermon by seeing the conclusion to the whole matter. It's right here in 1 Corinthians chapter 16. 1 Corinthians chapter 16. And verse 13 and 14, Paul said, watch, stand fast in the faith, be brave or courageous, be strong, let all that you do be done with love.